Hello and welcome back. It's been a genuinely strange week in AI, stranger than most, so let's get into it. The story that dominated everything was Claude Fable 5. Anthropic released it on June the 9th, called it their most capable model ever, and 3 days later, it was gone. Pulled entirely, not deprecated, not quietly sunset, shut down globally, by order of the US Department of Commerce. That's the week we're unpacking. Fable 5 is built on what Anthropic calls the Mythos 5 architecture. Technically the same model, but with additional safety classifiers layered on top. When you ask it anything touching cybersecurity, biology, chemistry, or model distillation, it silently routes your query down to Claude Opus 4.8 instead. The benchmarks were striking. 80% on SWE bench agentic coding, meaningful gaps over GPT 5.5 and Gemini 3.1 Pro. Across a dozen channels this week, people were building Minecraft clones, Pokemon remakes, full OS simulations, and one particularly eyebrow-raising demo from Nate Herc, who fed Fable a single prompt, went to the gym, and came back to a complete YouTube video. Avatar, voice clone, motion graphics, edited and assembled. Stripe reportedly used it to migrate 50 million lines of Ruby in a single day. Whether you believe that or not probably depends on your priors about Ruby. And then on the evening of June 12th, it was over. The Commerce Department told Anthropic to cut off access for all foreign nationals, which includes non-American Anthropic employees, international customers, and effectively anyone outside the United States. Since Anthropic has no mechanism to verify citizenship, their only compliant option was to switch it off for everyone. The stated reason, a discovered jailbreak method that could get the model to analyze code vulnerabilities. Anthropic pushed back publicly, saying the method is narrow, non-universal, and that the same information is accessible via GPT 4.5 and other public models, which, if true, makes the directive look less like a security measure and more like a message. Several analysts, Nate B. Jones and the French language channel IA Ete Strategie among them, identified what they believe is the actual backstory. In February, Anthropic declined a Pentagon request to make Claude available for autonomous weapon systems. Shortly after, the company was reportedly labeled a supply chain risk, a designation normally reserved for entities like Huawei, and was excluded from federal contracts. A federal judge apparently recognized this as retaliatory. So when the Commerce Department showed up with a jailbreak justification 3 days after Fable's launch, the timing was, let's say, notable. What everyone seems to agree on across the ideological spectrum of commentators this week is that this is a first. The first genuine rollback of a frontier model on security grounds. Nate B. Jones put it well. Frontier AI models are no longer ordinary software products. They're national security assets now. Future model launches won't just be questions of capability. They'll be questions of government approval and access control. The practical upshot, as multiple channels noted, is that if you've built critical workflows on a single model from a single lab, you don't have a stable foundation. You have a dependency. Fable is expected to return, probably with trusted access programs, compliance language, and new reporting requirements attached. But the landscape has changed. On the financial side, AI MIT Arnie walked through what he sees as a potential domino effect. Fewer global users means less revenue, which means smaller hardware orders, which means pressure on NVIDIA and TSMC valuations, which could ripple outward. It's a plausible chain, though the more sober voices were quick to point out that this is speculative, and that 1 3-day shutdown, however unprecedented, is not a financial crisis. Before leaving the Fable topic entirely, a few practical notes that came out of the week's coverage. Mark Kasheff made a genuinely useful point about how to actually use the model efficiently before it went down, and which will presumably apply when it returns. Fable on high effort for planning and specification. Opus or Sonnet for execution. Fable on low effort for verification. The slash model command in Claude Code lets you switch mid-session. Fable 5 medium already outperforms Opus 4.8 Max apparently, so you don't always need to run it at full cost. And Melvinx and IAET Strategy both did the math on the subscription economics. The $200 plan, under optimal usage with cache reads factored in, represents something like $18,000 in API equivalent value. That gap closes on June 22nd when Fable moves to pay-as-you-go only. Brian Kazel tested Fable on a real project, an extension for his residence radar tool in Rails, rather than a toy demo. And his observation was that the refinement phase after an initial build shrinks considerably when the model has clear verification criteria to check its own work against. His conclusion? Professional planning is now the more critical skill, not coding. That's a theme that kept recurring this week from multiple directions. Nate Herc's video on dynamic subagent workflows in Claude Code is worth flagging separately. He demonstrated running hundreds of parallel agents, each configured as a markdown file with its own model, toolset, and description, with the main agent acting as orchestrator. It's a pattern that scales in ways that single-threaded prompting simply doesn't. On the Codex side, OpenAI's agent platform, Nate B. Jones offered a framing I found clarifying. Claude Code feels like a cockpit, where you're flying alongside the model. Codex feels like an operations center, where you dispatch tasks and check back in. Neither is better. They cultivate different working habits. Melvinx did a live hour-long session with Codex on his anonymization app, Subface, and separately published a 90-minute free course covering the fundamentals, orchestrator function, skill categories, subagents, TOML configuration. Worth bookmarking if you're getting into it. Nicholas Steenfat ran the same 10,000-word task manager spec through Codex, Claude Code, and Google's Anti-Gravity IDE simultaneously. Anti-Gravity delivered a lean base in 4 minutes. Codex produced a functional dashboard with self-testing via headless Chromium in 21 minutes. Claude Code took over 45 minutes but delivered the most polished UI. For prototyping speed, Codex won clearly. For production finish, Claude Code. Anti-Gravity is fast but shallow. The Apple WWDC story got less attention than Fable this week, which is understandable, but Nate B. Jones made a case that it deserves more. His argument, which I find fairly persuasive, Apple isn't trying to build the best frontier model. They're trying to own the surface through which a billion people touch AI every day. The device, the operating system, the permission prompts, Siri. The Google Gemini and NVIDIA GPU integrations in private cloud compute aren't signs of failure. They're Apple treating raw model compute as a commodity while controlling the layer that actually matters. The key developer obligation is app intents. Apps need to expose their data models and actions cleanly to the operating system so that Apple Intelligence can actually do things rather than just suggest them. That's a non-trivial architectural shift for developers. The compute scarcity piece, covered by Theo, is worth a quick note. SpaceX is apparently selling excess GPU capacity to Google and Anthropic because TSMC and HBM production genuinely cannot keep up with demand. The infrastructure constraints are real and not going away soon. The iGrid examined Elon Musk's proposal to move AI compute into satellite orbit. 60% sunlight availability sounds appealing until you factor in radiation damage, latency, and current costs, running 3.5 to 4 times higher than terrestrial data centers. Cost parity is projected for the early 2030s at the earliest. NVIDIA and Span's partnership with home builder Pulte Group, putting 16 Blackwell RTX 6000 GPUs into private homes to monetize unused electrical capacity, is a genuinely novel idea with genuinely unresolved questions about maintenance, liability, and weather-distributed residential hardware can actually serve clustered AI workloads. On the model benchmarking front, the research paper Emergent Analogical Reasoning in Transformers, covered by the AI Grid, is worth sitting with. The finding: on analogical reasoning tasks, medium-sized models outperformed larger ones. Bigger wasn't better. The researchers attribute this to whether a specific internal structure, they call it geometrical alignment, forms during training, and that structure doesn't reliably emerge just by adding parameters. This doesn't invalidate scaling laws entirely, but it's a crack in the foundation. If certain cognitive capabilities plateau or regress at scale, the $100 billion bet that bigger always means smarter gets more complicated. Ilya Sutskever has said publicly that the scaling era is over. This paper gives that claim some empirical texture. Tech, with Tim's guide to local models with LM Studio and the continue extension in VS Code, is a solid practical resource if you want to run Qwen family models locally for autocomplete. The Fable ban gave this whole category renewed urgency this week. The argument for local models as a hedge against regulatory and vendor risk went from theoretical to illustrated in real time. Tim Karambat from Anything LLM covered Google's Gemma 12b QAT, quantization-aware training, natively multimodal without separate encoders, runs on a normal laptop, and performed well in a tool-use demo involving web scraping, summarization, and PDF creation. Genuinely capable for its weight class. David Shapiro's forthcoming book, Credible Threats, is a project I'll be watching. His argument, sketched in a video this week, human labor was the foundation of democratic bargaining power because it's embodied, collective, and non-storable. Full automation breaks what he calls the double bilateral dependency. Elites need workers. Workers have leverage. When that breaks down, the historical mechanisms for winning rights stop working. He draws on data suggesting that nonviolent resistance has a 53% success rate versus 26% for violent resistance, and that 3.5% active participation in coordinated action has never historically failed. Whether you find this framework alarming or clarifying probably depends on where you sit, but it's a more rigorous version of the conversation most people are having in much vaguer terms. The interview on Everlast AI with Professor Christoph von der Malzburg covers complementary ground from a neuroscience angle. His core point: LLMs are 10,000 to 100,000 times more energy hungry than the human brain's 20 watts. Because they lack what he calls the binding problem solution, the ability to integrate distributed information into coherent situations without a central coordinating instance. A child sees one toy zebra and understands zebras. A language model needs millions of training images. He's not wrong, and Jan LeCun and others are working on alternatives, though nothing production ready yet. Quick run through the shorter items before we close. Temporal, the durable execution platform, was featured at its own Replay conference. OpenAI uses it internally for scaling agent workflows. Scanner is an interesting data solution for large log volumes built on object storage like S3, with temporary search clusters and AI integration. Skywork 3.0 markets itself as a cloud workforce with access to multiple top models under one interface. Kyle Balmer's video on AI SEO had one statistic worthy remembering. Best X list articles make up 43.8% of pages cited by ChatGPT, and YouTube mentions have the highest correlation with AI visibility. More useful than schema markup, which apparently does almost nothing. And Melvinx's list of Mac tools for developers: Parler for open source, speech to text, Zid as a fast code editor with Codex integration, Raycast with Gemini 3.1 flash, Helium as a minimal browser, and Clack, which plays mechanical keyboard sounds through your speakers for $5. I'm not going to pretend I don't understand the appeal. The thread running through all of this, if there is one, is dependency. The Fable shutdown made viscerally clear that building on any single model, from any single lab, in any single jurisdiction, is a form of structural fragility. The interesting question isn't whether that was a good or bad policy decision. It's what the appropriate response looks like. Diversification across models, local fallbacks, workflow portability, compliance, awareness. The people who treated this week as a fire drill rather than a disaster are probably better positioned than the people who treated it as an outrage. Both reactions are understandable. Only one of them is useful.